प्रोफेसर श्रीकांत सारंगी जी, आपने इनको दो मिनट में से एक मिनट बोलते हुए सुना होगा परसों, लेकिन उस एक मिनट में भी आपने जो कहा वो बहुत मीनिंगफुल था। और हमें ऐसा लगा जब ज्यादा सुनने का मौका मिलेगा आपको, तो हमें भी सभी को सीखने को बहुत कुछ मिल सकता है। ऐसे ही एक अनुभवी आत्मा हम सबके बीच है, प्रोफेसर श्रीकांत सारंगी। दो आई हैड इंट्रोड्यूस्ड हिम वेरी ब्रीफली द अदर डे, आई वुड लाइक टू रीड आउट हिज अचीवमेंट्स एंड हिज ब्रीफ प्रोफाइल दैट आई हैव विथ मी। प्रोफेसर श्रीकांत सारंगी जी विद मल्टीपल डिग्रीज, एंड ही इज द एमए, PGCTE, PGDTE, Masters in Literature, PhD, FACSS. I'm sure you must be knowing the full forms of it. I do not know. And Srikant Sarangiji has been professor in humanities and medicine and is the director of the Danish Institute of Humanities and Medicine, DIHM, between 2013 and 2021 at Aalborg University, Denmark, where he continues as adjunct professor. In 2012, he was awarded the title of Fellow by the Academy of Social Sciences, UK. In 2015, he was elected as a foreign member of the Finnish Society of Sciences and Letters. Professor Sarangi has held several project grants to study various aspects of health communication. So we have the right person to talk on the subject today, because this topic is going to be on communication, and especially in the health sector. He's author and editor of 12 books, guest editor of 10 journal special issues, and has published more than 250 journal articles and book chapters in leading journals. In addition, he has presented more than 1,200 papers, including plenaries, keynotes, master classes, and workshops at international conferences and other forums. Since 1998, he is the editor of Text and Talk, an interdisciplinary journal of language, discourse, and communication studies, formerly TEXT, as well as the founding editor since 2004 of both Communication and Medicine and Journal of Applied Linguistics and Professional Practice, formerly Journal of Applied Linguistics. He is also general editor of the book series Studies in Communication in Organizations and Professions, which is in short form called SCOPE, S-C-O-P-E. He serves as an editorial board member for other journals and book series and as a consulting advisor at many national and international levels. Over the last 20 years, he has held visiting academic attachments in many parts of the world, including Australia, Brazil, and I can go on with the names of the countries, in many countries. So we welcome you, brother. Please take your seat on the stage. Bhai ji.
Jotted down a few things sitting in the back for the last 2 days. I want to share that first and then get on to the proper talk. Am I right that this session is now 1 hour? Okay, good to know that. First of all, I would like to thank the medical wing, particularly Banarasi Lal Bhaiji and his team, and also the sister from Puri, Nirupama Behen. I think she has been the instrument why I am here. Completely surprise package for me to speak to you. It's an opportunity that when I heard this possibility, I immediately looked up my diary and said, I have time and I can come. So I was excited. Being from Odisha, that I will for the first time talk to the Odia medical profession. I have no professional. I've never shared any of the things that I'm going to talk today to my own people. So it's a very nice feeling. But that feeling, I think, disappeared last evening when I was sitting there and listening to all the qualities an Odia has to have. You came up with simplicity, compassion, hospitality. I started looking into my soul. Do I have these qualities to call myself an Odia anymore? Probably not. So very quickly, I kind of started to feel that maybe I'm not yet, but I could. And having spent most of my life and all of my professional life abroad, it's great to know so many doctors, so I can come back. And now I can feel safe because I know people. So that's a nice feeling I'll go back with. Okay. Basically, what I'll be talking today will be very different from what I have sensed from the last 2 days, but complement. It's nothing away from what you have been told in the last couple of days. But it's because of what I can do, my abilities or inabilities. So I am basically a researcher. I'm not even a teacher, mostly a researcher. But of course, as part of research, I have to go and do sessions with doctors, medical professionals and so on, workshops and symposia. So I'm not a spiritually gifted person, so I wish I was, then I could sit in this chair, become an instrument and God speaks with me, then that would be great. I think if I chose that option, it would be all finished in 2 minutes. The instrument will get blocked or choked. So I'm neither a spiritually gifted person, and that's the difference for this session, nor am I a medic. Okay, so even if I was a medic, looking at all the specialisms present here, I couldn't speak to any specialism, and nobody can, to somehow satisfy you or meet the intellectual interest of all specialisms. They're so different and so diverse. So we're not talking about medical science, medical knowledge. But there is something that we have to communicate that knowledge to the patients, to fellow doctors, to the management in the hospital, the systems. So communication is a core element of healthcare practice. That is where I'm coming from. So all I'll say today will be very different, not just in substance, because it hopefully will be something new, but also in style. So this is very much a scholarly, evidence-based presentation. So I'll provide evidence for what I say. It's not something that I can simply ask you, take you in a journey through meditation. I don't have that ability. So you can keep awake, listen to what I have to say. There will be no journeys of trance or meditation or anything of the kind. So basically, something that I will be focusing on today, looking at the topic of the program, this capacity building, sensitive communication and stress management. I think I can say very confidently that you have had a lot of input about stress management so far. And stress management is something about self-actualization, self-belief, self-growth, self-development, all the things, the soul consciousness and so on. But for once, we'll move away from soul consciousness to role consciousness. Your role in the system, healthcare system. Your role, your attachment, your relationship with patients and families. Those are important. Likewise, also moving away from self-development, self-awareness, to becoming oriented to the other, the patients, the other fellow human beings, the family, the society, and so on. So in that sense, this is complementary, that we become, I think I can also say, that the self-development, becoming a pious, pure soul, is not just a precursor, but a precondition for being other-oriented. And I'll say something about the notion of self and other, philosophically and theoretically as well. So we cannot be selves without being an other. Actually, I just overheard a little conversation about taking a selfie. And our brother was saying that those who take a selfie because they don't have others to take it for them, they are the ones who take selfies because they can't ask and they don't have anybody in this world. They're orphans. But actually, a selfie has no meaning if there is no other. The selfie actually is for others. It's not for you. So even if you take it, the very next minute, it's transmitted to somebody that you have taken a selfie. So selfie, even the notion of selfie, has an otherness. Even if you are taking it, it's for sharing with others. So the self and other, and I'll come back to that in a bit more detail. But I just wanted to say that this is what we'll be talking about in this session, and I'll continue tomorrow. So since the session has been reduced by half an hour, I'll probably either skim a few slides because I didn't bother to readjust or whatever, doesn't matter. I can follow up tomorrow. And that half an hour that we save, I could do it in Odisha itself. So come to me. I'm going back to UK next week and then I'm back in Puri on the 11th of September. So maybe they wanted to keep something away from this program so we can do it back in Puri. So that's something we can think. Okay, so I'm going to focus on the first part of the topic, sensitive communication. And I'll begin with a little task for a couple of minutes. What concepts, what words come to your mind when you hear the term sensitive? Just a few.
Specific.
Okay.
Not unpleasant.
No, I can't hear. Sorry. No.
Not unpleasant.
Not unpleasant.
Very tender.
Tender.
I don't know. Consider the psychology of the situation of the patient.
Okay. Delicate. Delicate. Yes.
Delicate.
Sorry.
Which can generate some unpleasantness in the listener.
Yeah. Okay, so sensitivity is a kind of being, thinking about the other. I ask the same question to myself, and you might notice I call it first warm-up task. What does it tell you? If I said something first task, what do you anticipate? There will be more. So there will be a second or third or more. If there was only one task, I would not have called it first task. Already we can begin to see how we communicate. So what you did from the word first is you did something that is called inference. You inferred. By calling it first, I implied. It's called implicator. Some of the things that are part of the communication is a science. It is not just something that we, of course we all do, but there are theories and ways of doing communication. And that's the kind of thing. So if I say first, so clearly there is a second, sometime coming. Okay. And if it doesn't come, then I must be mad. I was not focusing. I should not have said it first. Okay, so I asked myself and I put down all these words. And you may have already thought about these things. Delicate, empathy of course, compassion, rapport, respect, dignity, patient autonomy, patient-centeredness, emotional, psychological, moral, ethical, being attentive. We have been talking about that. Being attentive to the patient. But of course, listening actively. So we don't think about communication immediately. We simply say about these values, these qualities. But I am going to suggest that you have to communicate these things. How do you communicate compassion? How does the patient walk away from the clinic and say, the doctor was not only good by giving me the right prescription and treatment, but was very compassionate. That the doctor was actively listening to me. How do you do that? So these things can be just said, but practicing them, communicating these values, how do I communicate empathy? How do I communicate compassion? So communication then becomes the channel, the means through which we somehow come across as being compassionate, kind, respectful, treating somebody as significantly dignified, and so on and so forth. So I'm going to unpack this term sensitive communication in three different ways. So for me, sensitive means sensitive topics. Okay, a mastectomy can be a sensitive topic. Abortion or pregnancy can be a sensitive topic. Okay, so sensitive topics might be specific to specific specialisms. Okay, so sensitive topics, the what? What is it that is very challenging? Then we have sensitive settings. Not just the topics, but this is a outpatient clinic. This is accident and emergency. This is palliative care. This is end of life. This is obstetrics and gynecology. So each setting has a particular, and I'll give a very concrete example in a few minutes, how the setting can make you very bad communicator, can make you insensitive to patients' stories, patients' lives, because the setting is not right. It's too crowded. The waiting room is full. So there is no environment even to communicate sensitively, even if the topic is sensitive. So we need to be separate a sensitive topic from a sensitive setting. Then we have sensitive ways of communicating. Even if the setting is great, like here, the topic is sensitive, you may still need the skills, the resources, the communicative power, the communicative recipe, if you like, to deal with that sensitive topic in that particular setting. No amount of skill, no amount of preparation can make you do that. It is something very instantaneous, very intuitive, and these are the things that happen, but of course with practice and experience that intuition becomes your knowledge, becomes your embodied knowledge. Sensitive topics I could have asked, but for the sake of time I'll go through these things, so I'm sure you can think of many others. One of the ones, very overarching sensitive topic, is to deliver bad news. Whether it's in cancer setting, whether it is in HIV/AIDS, whether it is in any other clinical setting, delivering bad news. The patients do not expect. I mean, they might be expecting the worst, but they also still want to hear something good. So giving bad news, and there is a huge amount of research on how to give bad news well. Bad news can be given badly, very badly actually. And that is far more impactful than giving the bad news in a very nice way. So the bad news can be received. More importantly, they can comply with the treatment regime. So the compliance, adherence to treatment can also depend on how you communicate sensitively, the same thing. So we say the patients are different, but so are the doctors. Okay? It's not just the patients who experience the clinic differently, but different doctors have different communicative styles, even if they have the same amount of knowledge, same amount of experience, the communication style might be different, and that could make an impact. That could make the patient outcome good or bad. So we can break down the notion of delivering bad news to giving a diagnosis of Huntington's, for instance, from a predictive test. And that's progressive, not curable. It can be running in the whole family. It affects the future generations, and so on and so forth, and relationships. So that is a very sensitive area to give, to break that news in genetic counseling, for instance. Any things to do with prognosis, like in cancer, how long do I live? How much time have I got left? That's sensitive. You may not have a proper answer to this, but it's a topic that has to be handled. You can't say, I don't know, I'm sorry. There is something you still have to say, I think this, but nobody knows. With this we might reduce this, with that things might get better. So those are the kind of things around prognosis. Any form of risk, any uncertainty, medical practice is full of uncertainties, and you can be far more specific: termination of pregnancy, abnormal fetus, switching off the life support in end of life, resuscitation, medical futility, that medicine can't do no more. That's a huge concept. When do doctors have faith in the notion of futility rather than success, and science can do miracles? Medical futility is real. Medicine can do no more. How do you communicate that to parents or to families? Compliance with treatment regimes in diabetes. That's difficult, very sensitive, because there are elements of sexual relationships, elements of exercise, elements of work, stress. There are so many things that are associated with diabetes. How do you break into these areas? So one of the areas, one of my own PhD students in Denmark, was herself a physician and was trying to explore why don't people come to the diabetes clinic and openly talk about their problems, sexually speaking, their sexual health. But once you tell them why don't you speak, they won't talk about why they don't speak, because it's a taboo subject. So the topics, sensitive topics, are also taboo topics. Nobody wants to talk about death, prognosis, or sexual relationships and so on. Like self-disclosure is pretty sensitive in HIV/AIDS. Are you going to disclose?
Regarding the information
about death. Yes, but prognosis I meant. I mean, I'm not listing everything. I think you can add to this list. I was going to ask if there was more time. Think of from your own life as something that became a sensitive topic. How you dealt with it, how else could it have been dealt with? And those would be workshops and, you know, lessons and so on. We are not going to do all this. This is just to give you a sense. It's just like a little menu. Of course, I came up with a few words, but you can think of anything that could be. Death is absolutely, but similarly, a stillbirth is a sensitive topic. You know, imagine a child dead before being born. How sensitive is that? So sensitive topic you are dealing with in your everyday life. Or are you communicating that sensitive topic well or optimally, or could it be better, or can we reflect on that? So that's the challenge. Again, sensitive settings can be every clinical setting, so I don't need to read through this, you can just imagine. So I think most generally, and this is just a point I want to make, when something goes beyond the medical realm, the biomedical realm, enters into the psychological, the family relationships, life events, it becomes more sensitive. So predictive testing in genetics is a very sensitive area because it involves the whole family, the past and the future. Okay? It even breaks relationships. Many people are divorced after a predictive test result. So likewise, you can think of many areas where people come to the clinic with a medical condition, but there is a lot more behind that condition. And a doctor is not always competent to deal with all that. You are not spiritual counselors, you are just a medical professional. So you have a limit to how far you can go into people's lives. And people may not trust well enough doctors to tell everything of their lives. So it's very interesting, at least in the West, I'm not particularly familiar with the Indian setting. What strikes me a lot is when people are giving bad news and a bad prognosis, they don't show any emotions. They will simply say minimally, okay, that's it. Something of the kind. They don't cry. Nobody cries in the cancer clinic when they hear they have got cancer or they're going to die in 6 months. That's because people do not display their emotions in public places. That's the Western culture. Secondly, a physician is a professional at a distance. They are not family members. So they don't want to disclose everything to a healthcare professional unless it is psychiatry or some counseling and so on. So physicians have to have that trust, engender that trust, for patients to tell everything openly. And I'll get back to those points. Why is it so difficult? Because every medical condition has a social wrap around it. How far you want to delve into those social issues, relational issues, If you have depression, tell me about how your husband treats you. They may not open up. Or you may not feel like asking, because then you might be seen as being nosy, seen as going beyond your professional role. So these issues are always going to be pretty different in each unique. Every case is unique. I think this is very important in medical profession. Each patient is not only a person, but a unique person. But medical practice, medical training is generic. Okay, there are things that would work. There are styles of communication that should do. This is what you do. So the challenge in terms of those three things, sensitive topics, sensitive settings, and sensitive ways of communicating, we can summarize it. So the challenge for all of us, those of us who are in the clinical practice, and this doesn't have to be medical, even in my professional life, I come through these issues. My PhD students might come with a very sensitive area, and I have to deal with it. So the challenge is to find sensitive ways of communicating sensitive topics in sensitive settings, just to put it all together. And let me give you a very concrete example. So I'll only narrate it because there is no time to show you the details. So this is a pediatric cardiologist who contacted me. This is back in the UK, in Cardiff. So he works in the hospital. I mean, the university is part of the same system. So he called me up and said, I would like you to come and spend 3 days in my clinic and write a report that will go to the top of the hospital management. His reason was that the space he was given, the pediatric cardiology clinic, was not enough to communicate properly with the patients. So what happens? It's a very small, crowded area, just separated by some walls. Okay. So as the pregnant lady comes in, usually with a companion, they have to take some details about the history of the pregnancy, about lifestyle, do you smoke, how much alcohol do you consume? All these things can be very relevant for the pregnancy. And so these are sensitive things to ask in a crowded place. And what makes it even more sensitive in the context of UK and elsewhere in the West, you never know whether the companion is the third husband or partner or just a friend or is having an affair with. There's no way of knowing that this is, you cannot assume the man accompanying the pregnant woman is the rightful husband. And they don't ask that, they assume. So if you assume that this is the real husband of the pregnant woman, then the woman might not tell all the truth. She's not going to tell things that she has not told the so-called husband, right? About first pregnancy, she might have even hidden the fact that she has another boy from another marriage. So this is a sensitive topic, sensitive exchange of information, but the setting is not right. It's too crowded, nurses are walking around, other people are going. So there is no way that this information can be gathered before the ultrasound happens. So I was observing, okay, like a researcher. So my role was simply to observe what's going on, to take notes, give feedback, and write a report that he will take to the medical director and get something resolved. So then, because there was no space for extracting this very important, personal, sensitive information, but it had to be extracted because it's important. So what happens? The woman and the companion, they're taken straight into the bed, ultrasound bed. The woman is asked to lie down. That posture of somebody lying down and you asking questions, it's very difficult to communicate sensitively because you are not making eye contact. You don't feel the stress or the psychological, emotional things that might be going on. But she had to very quickly, like a matter of fact, because that information has to be taken very quickly. Okay, do you smoke? How often do you drink? So just fill in the forms. But it wasn't satisfactory. And the consultant himself said he doesn't like doing it. So in other words, he was telling me that the circumstances, the physical circumstances, are forcing him to be insensitive. He wants to be sensitive, to communicate properly, modestly, but he can't because the circumstances don't allow that. So it's very important, what space do we get in a hospital? Do we have separate rooms for talking to patients about before the treatment or before the ultrasound and afterwards, because there has to be room. Actually, a chaplain, a priest is already at hand because there would be a termination of pregnancy and there would be immediate counseling, not after 3 days or 4 weeks. So that is already another, already part of the setup. So then all that was happening and then the ultrasound exam began. There are at least 8 different professionals, health professionals around, almost like what do you do as part of your surgical anatomy, standing around a dead body. It felt like they were all looking into with the notebooks. So the sonographer, the physiotherapist, all kinds of people standing around. And the cardiologist, a very nice, very gentle soul, said to the woman and the companion, from now on I'll talk in a language you will not understand. Very technical. So basically, as he starts the probe and gets to see the pictures, the visuals on the screen, he's talking all in medical jargon for others to take down. But that doesn't mean, even if these people don't understand, they're not affected by it. I was observing them. They're looking at each other. Is it good or what is he saying? Is it good or bad? At least that. They might, from the tone of voice, from what you are saying, they might infer. Remember the inference? First means there is a second. So they might infer. So there's something I write at the very bottom, say, you cannot not communicate. Communication is so innate. If I ask you something, if I look at you and you don't say anything, you have already communicated that you don't want to talk to me. If I ask you a question and you turn away, that means either my question is stupid or you don't like my question or you don't have an answer. A very small example would be when you get into the aircraft, take your seat, there are some people who are very talkative. They just want to know, so where are you going? As if you can go somewhere than where the plane is bound to. Everybody is going to Delhi. You can't go anywhere else. But if you take the first couple of minutes, not make eye contact. So when the next passenger comes and sits next to you, you look outside the window or read something or do something else. If you can manage those first 5 minutes, they will not talk to you for the rest of the flight. But if they start, if you make eye contact, hello, and give a smile, non-stop. So we cannot not communicate. Even if we are silent, we are communicating. Even if we are giving a wrong response, we are communicating that we don't know, that we are arrogant, we are stupid. So not communicate. So in this case, these very medical, technological terms did not mean anything to them. They did not understand. That's for sure. Because I even couldn't understand. So basically, even if they didn't understand, it doesn't mean that they don't want to try to get some meaning. So you could see the emotions on their faces from the words that have been spoken, even though they didn't understand it. But the next thing that struck me most, and that became a point of learning for the cardiologist, the consultant, is when he was doing the ultrasound proper, applying the gel and doing the probe around the abdomen and looking into the screen, he was making what I call self-talk. He's talking to himself and he's making some noises. Oh no. Right. oh God, he's doing something, and all those things meant to the couple, let's take them as the couple, it must be related to the fetus. Maybe the fetus is not right. Maybe, oh, I can't see. Maybe the fetus can't be seen, has disappeared. So every those, so you had the technical language which did not mean anything, but they still wanted to make sense of it. These are very meaningless noises, but they are not meaningless. They are very powerful, and especially in showing sensitivity, empathy, compassion. These are the words, not the proper words, I am with you. Actually, the more you say I am with you, they don't trust you. But if the, these are called minimal responses. Eye contact, touch, we talked about yesterday. Those are far more communicative than words. Words don't communicate always. So when he was making these noises, even though they sounded meaningless, these were the most effective words for the couple. So they took it that the child is not okay, the child is not normal, something is wrong, so why is he making these noises? So I had to ask the consultant afterwards, what are those noises for? What did they mean? And who were they intended for? Who were you talking to? He said, oh, I was not talking to anybody. But you cannot not talk to anybody when there are 10 people in the room. Remember, you cannot not communicate. So everybody is going to make sense of you not telling them anything. So what those words meant is he was having trouble with getting the picture right. He was having trouble with the fetus not being stagnant, not being stable. So those are the things that he was commenting on. So he was commenting on his procedure, not about the fetus, not about abnormality. But the couple took this to be comments about the child, about the fetus. So that became an example, and I know for sure, and he has told me, he doesn't make these noises again. Because he immediately understood that those noises could be miscommunicating or communicating the wrong things. So one of the tensions in professional clinical life is trying to be sincere, the evidence, the facts in front of you, all the test results and everything, and at the same time being sensitive. How do you manage these two things? And you can't be one or the other. You can't be just sensitive and not be sincere. Because why? Then you have failed them, failed your patients. The patients have come to you as a professional, not as a cousin, a mother or a sister, that they can get at home. They can get parts of sympathy, empathy, compassion, even at home. But the physician has to combine the sincerity, the facts of medical tests and results and so on, the diagnosis, but also sensitively. Sensitivity here doesn't mean to give false hope, false optimism, to tell people everything would be fine, sounds good and they can go, or to deceive the patient intentionally. You know something is not right, but you don't want to tell it because they will be too affected. So this is one of the reasons why you might withhold something, or you might say something in sweet pills, sugar-coated, but they are not right. So how to be sincere, because that is your professional commitment, to be sincere. But you also want to be sensitive, it's your humanitarian aspect. And that challenge is not going to be easily solved, and it will be unique in each instance. Again, a very concrete example, a study from Holland, the Netherlands. And this was a prognosis and kind of a long-term cancer patient. I think the son and the family who were looking after the carers, they came to the consultant and asked, would it be okay if we went away for a brief holiday, for a break, and nothing will happen to our father? And the consultant looked at everything, all the reports, and said, no, I think it seems fine. You just can go away for a break. It's needed. Carers need to be equally part of the system. So go away and we'll be fine. Unfortunately, the father died by the time the son and family returned. And it became a legal case because they wanted to have a litigation against the consultant because he had promised that everything would be fine. They would have definitely not gone away and been by the bedside, the deathbed, because that's a huge thing you cannot recreate, you can't give back. So false optimism, anything that you cannot promise, sometimes you might, out of sensitivity, being kind, being compassionate, but that can come back and haunt you. So this is why the challenge is, try, how do we want to be sincere and sensitive at the same time? Be factual, evidence-based, but also person-centered and patient-centered. So there are many things, and some of these I'll explain or explore tomorrow as concrete examples. I'm just signposting them now so you can think about these things. And this is where my involvement in healthcare comes in, that I can indicate concrete, practical, tangible styles of communication for these very stressful events. So one is to try and be as transparent and as explanatory as you can. It may not work in the Indian setting or in Odisha, depends on the literacy of the patients. You can't just go on giving a lecture if they're not understanding anything. But if they do, and if you have started to find out how much they know about the condition that they have, then I will mention something called online and offline commentaries, you know, like in sports, in cricket, in football. As you give commentary, the ball now goes, so it's a commentary. So particularly giving commentary during physical examination itself is a very useful strategy for people to go with you. So nothing is absolutely mysterious. But I'll give a concrete example tomorrow from pediatry. How to break bad news? Of course, we all give bad news. It must be a very desperate profession where you are the epitome of bad news. Anybody comes through the door, and we were talking yesterday, if you're going to see 20 patients in throughout the day, how much bad news can you deliver? How much can you take? How thick-skinned are you? How do you get out of the bad news of the previous one to move to the fresh bad news? So you need to deal with bad news communicatively. There are ways of doing it. One way is what is called perspective display. Try to get somehow the perspective of the patient. What were they expecting? Sometimes you might find actually their expectation is worse than what you are going to give them. They might have come thinking, my father has only 3 weeks, but actually you're going to say 3 months. So it's not bad news in that sense, because 3 weeks is the worst. 3 months is good news. Likewise, giving the news of Down syndrome, what do the family expect? They might be already expecting Down syndrome means they will not be able to communicate, they're almost dead, they're vegetables and so on. Then you can say, no. Down syndrome is properly normal, it's different. Not normal, but it is still routinely okay. There are special schools, there are families, there are carers, there are all kinds of groups. So a Down syndrome child can have as normal a life. So that's good news. So bad news can be turned into good news if you have tried, invested a little bit of your time to elicit their expectations. Actually, in many medical training, people say, don't straight go into jump into your history taking and diagnosis, try to also find a little bit about their expectations. So if we know their expectations through asking them, what do you think is going to happen? What are you going to expect from this? Then that helps to gain access to patients' expectations, but also it optimizes or maximizes their acceptance of what you're going to tell them, or the treatment regime, or the decisions that you make. There are many other strategies. Another sensitive area let's say, in the context of genetics or HIV/AIDS. The sensitive topics would be high risk to your family members, to your offspring, even siblings, or even premature death. HIV/AIDS, you might infect and you might die, and so on. Then there is a strategy if you use what are called hypothetical if this happens, which is not real. Once you add the word if, it allows you to talk about sensitive areas, including death, very easily. Because you can't say you will die tomorrow. But you can say, if you died tomorrow, that somehow mitigates. Does it make sense? It somehow makes it easy to hear, pleasant to hear. So if is a very important word in many sensitive communication. If this were to happen, if you are given this, if there is a side effect, all these things are if. We don't know. I can't tell you for certain. But if these things happen, what we can talk about these things. So what if the hypothetical construction in language does, in every language, is to open up sensitive topics, taboo topics of death, of premature, or side effects, and so on. Another strategy is what is called time out for sensitive topics. In Netherlands, again, a study has shown, particularly with cancer clinics, and these clinics, usually the companions come. Same with genetics. Actually, in genetic counseling in the UK, you cannot come on your own. Somebody has to come with you, because everybody knows the patients are not in a proper mental state to take all the information, the bad news. So somebody else has to be there. So in this case, the doctor, the consultant, would pretend he has something to do and to leave the room for 5 minutes. Either a phone call or to bring a file. It's not something urgent, but he will just pretend that he has to do something. The idea is to give the couple time to think through quickly. Because where would they share? If they got the news, this is not easy to go home after 3 hours and talk about it. They have immediate thoughts and reactions and responses. So time out means just a little bit of time for the two people or the family. Just to quickly say, okay, so do you think we should go through this treatment or we don't want it because that's too painful and too much suffering. So they might have already got a decision that they can communicate when the consultant comes back after 5 minutes. And there are many other strategies, communicative styles, which I have just listed, but we cannot go through them all. So, although I'm talking about sensitive communication with doctor-patient or families, of course, sensitive communication is even more sensitive, talking to administration. Sensitive communication in multidiscipline teams is very sensitive. Who decides? Who is the expert? Particularly when there is disagreements, that becomes very sensitive. So, sensitive issues are in multidisciplinary teams, writing referrals, even writing patient records, because in the UK and the US and many other countries, in European countries, patients can have access to the records. So you can't write as you used to write. So you have to write to them respectfully. You can't say, oh, we have got a, something like that. He's stupid, he didn't understand. You can't write that because they have access to it. So now these are also about patient records, referrals, multidisciplinary. These are also areas of sensitive communication. I'm sure anybody in management would know how sensitive it is to talk about negotiating salary, negotiating workload, negotiating success, who is going to be promoted and who is not. All these things are sensitive. So sensitivity doesn't begin and stop in the clinic. It is in the whole system, healthcare system. But I'm drawing my examples from the clinical setting. So here is the second task. There has to be a second after first. So have a think again. What does communication mean to you? How would you define? What do you understand by communication? What is communication?
relating the words together.
So there is always a medium, the words, even gesture, even we say we are communicating like this, that's communication. It doesn't have to be even words. But there has to be an other. Although you can't, you'll be seen as a psychiatric case if you're communicating too much to yourself. So an other, okay, so that's a medium to negotiate or to reach out to the other. That's fine. What other things do you associate with the word communication?
One way or two ways?
Yes. So there has to be response, responsiveness. Otherwise, there has to be an addressee or audience. Okay. What is the relationship between communication and your clinical practice, your expertise? Do you think these two things have anything to do with each other? They're integral. They are like the two sides of the coin. Even if you have a wealth of knowledge, training, qualifications, it's not useful if you can't communicate it. Okay? And here, communication can also mean looking at the X-ray, looking at the MRI scan. That scan has to be communicated with you, then communicated to the patient. Studies have shown doctors can read the same X-ray in many different ways. So in other words, the same X-ray can be interpreted differently. So if it is interpreted differently, it will lead to different diagnoses, different consequences. So then we can see that that's also a model of communication. So interpretation, understanding. So those are the things that we want to associate with communication. And again, if we have time, I'm sure each of you will say, I have 6 cases of sensitive communication. One happened yesterday, the other one happened day before yesterday, 3 happened, 3 days ago. So we all have sensitive topics, sensitive areas of communication in our work lives, and both clinical, educational, but also managerial, professional lives. And you can always think about these things, so we don't want to go into that. So this is what I would say, how we understand communication. For many people, communication is common sense. We all communicate, just like we all speak Odia or Hindi or English. That's natural. We are born with a language. Similarly, we must be born with speaking is not communication. Yesterday we were talking about hearing is not listening. We can speak and hear, but we still may not communicate. But those who believe communication is a common sense, and this has been for a long time in the medical profession, and particularly in medical education curriculum. Only recently in the UK and everywhere, communication is taught as a compulsory subject in medical curriculum. Because it is something that is, I would say, not just a skill, it's more than skill, it's a knowledge. As you become experienced, your communicative expertise also rises, just like your experience with the treatment becomes better, so does your communication. So they're very intimately connected. So clinical skills and communication skills are not separate. They are embedded. They are integrated. So we cannot take it that everybody is a competent communicator. Just like everybody is a pious soul, pure soul. We have to get to that. It's an achievement. We have to get to there. I think it's the same with being an ideal, competent, good communicator. So the difference is when we say we all speak our language, but actually if I tell you what is the difference between a particle and an adjective in Odia grammar, you can't. So you can speak the language properly, perfectly, but you don't have what is called the meta-language, the knowledge about the language. Likewise, communication also has meta-communication, something slowly I'll go through tomorrow, but that is one area that communication is common sense. We all have it, so why bother? Why do you have to listen to me If we all know that we communicate and we give bad news all our lives, so what is there to learn? So that's one way you can reject any input or any help from another person who might be able to tell you, no, you are doing it this way, I can analyze it, you can do it better. Look at this, here is the evidence. The next thing is, communication is a skill or is a form of behavior, very much coming from psychology. That communication is something, so if you make eye contact, actually the touch thing that we were talking about yesterday, if you look at the research on touch, it's fascinating. Not only where to touch, but when to touch within the consultation. You can't just touch the patient at any time of the clinic. It has to be at a particular time. If you touch at the wrong time, it miscommunicates. It can be seen as something else rather than empathy or compassion. Okay. The touch also has to be at the proper part of the body. You can't just touch somebody at any part of the body. Or you can't touch people like giving them a little push. It has to be gentle. So there is a grammar of touch. There is a syntax, semantics, discourse of touch. Touch is not just common sense. Then you come to the situation of gender, ethnicity, and culture and religion. You can't touch a Muslim woman. So what do you do? And you can't touch even a woman from the same culture. So touch is not something that we can say, we have learned now, touch is compassion. But actually it can be the opposite. If you do it wrongly, if you apply it wrongly, in the wrong time, wrong part of the body, and the wrong force, having giving a pat, oh come on, you will be alright. That would be exactly the opposite of empathy, sympathy. That would be the end of compassion. So touch, smile, eye contact. We can say these are important, but practicing them communicatively is a science. You have to take it seriously. And then you can see evidence. Here, let's take a video of how one does it, how another does it. Let's see the difference. Let's be analytical. It's microscopic. That's my job. I can microscopically analyze your smile. You can send me x-rays of your smiles, touches and so on. And I can say, look, I can find some disorder. You need some treatment or repair. So those things we can assume to be simple, they are not. There is science of touch, science around eye contact, how we sit with a folded hand, bending like this. All these things are scientific. There are meanings associated with every part of your body, posture, facial expressions, touch and so on and so forth. So that would be communication skill and behavior. The part that I am coming from is communication is a science, and you will get a feel of that. I don't want you to be communication scientist in one day or 5 days, but that's a whole lifetime profession. But you can get a glimpse of how much scientific this field is, just like medicine and other areas. So it's science and knowledge. So there are theories, there are principles with regard to what we practice. So a science has to have some theoretical background. So there are many theories of communication, but I'll not go through them, but you'll get a glimpse of or a taste of that. And the most important is, communication is an art. I got that sense from the last few days, when people sit down and they can talk as they sit down. They don't have to look at a slide, notes. They're talking from their own experience and they're sharing. So they can say, it's artful. They're not trained. I don't think they've gone through training courses to be that. So communication is an art in that sense. It's an art, it's a science, it's just common sense, it's also skill and behavior. What it tells us, it's a very complex phenomenon. It's not simple. We can't take it for granted. So a very simple definition of communication would be how we make meaning in context. The same thing doesn't mean the same thing out of context. Okay. So, how we make meaning in context, so it's meaning in context, but context is a very complex concept. What would you want to include in context of healthcare communication? It could be auditing, it could be workload, it could be long patient queues, it could be minimal resources, you don't have medicine, you have run out of something, supplies. So there are all things taken into account to build up the context of communication. I think on the first day, we were mentioning about a threat to the profession, physical abuse and violence. Do you know the scale of it in China? Huge. It is so huge that doctors are afraid of running clinics without some security or somebody else being present. And they're physically abusive because they are upset. The system is slow or something is not happening. So they are showing their dissatisfaction, their discontent to the agent of healthcare. You are the agent. You are the god of medicine. So they want to display their anger and they show it to you directly. And they are physically abusive, violent. I don't think it would be the same in India or Odisha and definitely not in the West. But discontent is there. Frustration is there, and those things must come out as part of the context. So you wanted to tell something very nicely and sensitively, but you don't have time because the waiting list is long. People who practice shared decision making, that's a big concept these days. Shared decision making must take at least twice the time than single decision making, a paternalistic decision you make on your own. So shared decision will take, if it is a 10 minutes, it should take 20 minutes. A very big name in shared decision making, a friend of mine who now works in the US, Glenn Olwen, he had a model of shared decision making. But he was also a practicing GP in near Cardiff in Swansea. And his colleagues hated him because he took too long for his clinic, for one patient, so the other colleagues had to see his patients. In other words, he was in a luxury of spending time to do shared decision making, patient-centered, but other people have to pick up the pieces. So everything that we think about sensitivity, communicative effectively, also means what context is there? How much time have we got? What resources do we have? Do we have somebody, cancer clinics in the UK, the consultant can just give the basic facts and leave the emotional, psychological side to the nurse consultant. So move from one room to the other, but that is divided labor, division of labor if you like. But it may not be possible in an Indian context. You have to be both the doctor and the carer at that point, and that is demanding, at least in terms of time, but I've also mentioned space, so that can also be pretty important. You have to tell me when my time is up. Give me an indication. No, but I still have time until finished. Okay. Oh, sorry. Oh, so I'll stop with this and we can continue tomorrow and then afterwards in Odisha. So this is just to give a final statement that what is healthcare communication? It's an art made up of sciences, experiences, and judgments. Do not underestimate your intuition. Very important. And all these, the science, the art, the judgments and the experiences are manifest at the level of communication. So thank you, and we'll talk again tomorrow.